Please call the case.
Case number SCWC 11-353, Kilakila O'Haleakala v. Board of Land and Natural Resources. Arguing for the petitioner, David Frankel. Also appearing for the petitioner, Camille Kalama and Sharla Manley. Arguing for the respondent, Board of Land and Natural Resources, Department of Land and Natural Resources, and William Isla, Linda Chow. Arguing for the respondent, University of Hawaii and Thomas M. Apple, Lisa Munger. Also appearing for the respondent, University of Hawaii and Thomas M. Apple, Lisa Bale, and Adam Robinson. Argument on the merits.
Good morning, counsel. Are you all ready to proceed this morning? Okay, and my understanding, Mr. Frankel, you've reserved 10 minutes for rebuttal, so we'll give you a warning light when there's 10 minutes to go in your argument. And then on the respondent side, my understanding the time has been split 15 minutes and 15 minutes. And Ms. Chow, you'll go first, is that right? And we'll give you a warning with 5 minutes left to go in your 15 minutes, and then a red light when you hit 15. Same for you, Ms. Munger. One thing I did want to just note for the record is I had filed a notice this morning regarding one of my law clerks having formerly been employed at the Goodsell firm and also going to that firm in the future, and noting that the law clerk has not and will not perform any work on this case. I wanted to be sure no one had any objections or concerns on my participation based on that. Okay, thank you very much. With that, we'll proceed. Mr. Frankel, thank you.
Aloha, Chief Justice and members of the court. This case concerns the approval of a project that the applicant admits will have major, adverse, long-term direct impacts on the traditional cultural resources at the summit of Haleakala. It concerns the approval of a permit in December 2010 to build a 142-foot-tall building in the Conservation District without giving adversely affected Native Hawaiians the right to cross-examine witnesses, present evidence, or preclude ex parte communication. The issue today is whether the court has jurisdiction. To address that issue, I think we need to discuss six questions. First, what does the term contested case mean? Second, is there a right to appeal pursuant to Chapter 91 when no formal contested case hearing has occurred? Third, was the proceeding in which the Conservation District use permit was granted a contested case for the purposes of appeal? Fourth, is this case moot? Fifth, does the public interest exception apply? And finally, do the doctrines of finality, ripeness, exhaustion of remedies, or primary jurisdiction affect the jurisdictional analysis? First, the term contested case means different things in different contexts. Sometimes the term contested case means it is used to describe the type of proceeding that must be held prior to appeal. In that context, determining whether a party has the right to appeal is based on the definition of contested case, which is one, A, required by law, and B, that determines the rights, duties, and privileges of specific parties. That test is laid out in PAC. Sometimes, however, the term contested case is used to describe a formal hearing with all the procedural provisions described in HRS 91-9 and 91-10. When used in this way, I'll try to use the term formal contested case hearing. But it is a use of this different term to mean different things that can lead to confusion. My second point. 40 years of case law has established that citizens have the right to appeal pursuant to Chapter 91 when no formal contested case hearing has occurred. In East Diamond Head Association, INRI Hawaiian Electric, Life of the Land versus Land Use Commission, Mahuiki, and Pele Defense Fund versus Puna Geothermal, the court held that it had jurisdiction to reach the merits, even though no formal contested case hearing took place. These cases established the principle that a formal contested case hearing is not needed to appeal pursuant to HRS 91-14. Even more on point, Mortensen, Pash, ENJ Lounge, and Kalikini versus Thielen, in those cases, this court concluded that a proper formal contested case hearing was not conducted, but should have been provided. Therefore, there should be no confusion. Citizens have the right to appeal pursuant to Chapter 91 when no formal contested case hearing has occurred. Third, the proceeding in which the BLNR granted a Conservation District use permit was a contested case for the purposes of appeal. The principle that the issuance of a development permit is a contested case for the purpose of appeal was established way back 30 years ago in Mahuiki. In Pele Defense Fund versus Columbia Thermal, this court refined and articulated in greater detail why this is the case. And the court said, as a matter of constitutional due process, an agency hearing is required where the issuance of a permit implicating an applicant's property rights adversely affects the constitutionally protected rights of other persons who have followed the agency's rules governing participation in contested cases. This court recently upheld this principle again in the Navajeja case a few months ago. We've cited three constitutional provisions that are implicated here. First, Article 12, Section 7, which protects traditional customary practices. This court recognized that this right is sufficient to mandate a contested case hearing in PASH, the Kapa'akai decision, and Navajeja.
Well, Mr. Frankel, in the Kalakini case and in PASH, there were specific regulations that required that there be a contested case hearing, correct?
That's true, Your Honor.
Okay, so we, in those cases, didn't need to rely on the existence of a constitutionally established or property right, which would then implicate due process, or a property right that would indicate implicate constitutional due process hearing requirement. So have we ever done what you're asking that we do in this case, where absent a specific regulate a rule or statute directing that there be a contested case hearing held, relied directly on the constitutional provision as the basis for them?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe you did in Navajeja. Now, there is the analysis that the majority approached and Justice Lacoba approached were somewhat different, but both of you found it on a constitutional basis. So I believe that's the case.
Weren't there specific interests in those particular streams, though, that were implicated there? Individuals who had or were asserting that the streams flowed onto their property or they had drawn water from those streams in a way that established an actual property interest?
My reading of that case, Your Honor, is that a good part of the interest that was involved was a traditional customary interest, that it did not have to, while there were some people in that case who owned property near or adjacent to streams, that was not the critical element to find that it was a contested case. I would also suggest that in the PASH analysis and the Kalakini analysis, when the court considers whether the rights, duties, and privileges of specific parties are affected, when there's a constitutional interest involved, the Part A and Part B of the definition of contested case hearing become one and the same. Because if the Constitution mandates a hearing because rights, duties, and privileges of specific parties are addressed, it all sort of collapses into one test. I do need to point out the concurrence in the Kalakini case by Justice Lacoba recognized the Article 12, Section 7 basis. And in this case, construction of more facilities on Haleakala will adversely affect appellant's directors, including their ability to engage in traditional and customary practices. A second constitutional basis is Article 11, Section 1, which provides that all public natural resources are held in trust by the state for the benefit of the people. In Akau, this court held that members of the public have the right to protect the public trust. The facilities proposed at the summit of Haleakala will adversely affect the public trust resources that appellant's directors enjoy. And the third constitutional provision is Article 11, Section 9, which provides, in short, that each person has the right to a clean and healthy environment. That substantive right is defined, in this case, by administrative rules. The administrative rule here, or two of them, are HAR 13-5-30C6, which protects, quote, the existing physical and environmental aspects of the land, such as natural beauty and open space characteristics. And C4, which prevents the development that will, quote, cause substantial adverse impact to existing natural resources within the surrounding area, community, or region.
Would you agree that there is no explicit or there's no statute or rule that actually establishes a requirement for a contested case hearing here, so we do have to go to a constitutional basis?
I think the constitutional basis is one this court should address. I'm not going to concede that, and we have consistently in our briefs talked about the fact that we think that a hearing is required by law. In this case, it was the proceeding was the Board of Land and Natural Resources granting the permit. The law requires the Board of Land and Natural Resources to issue that permit. And moreover, 13-5-40 has a somewhat complicated process for establishing when a public hearing must be held. And one of the circumstances that the director determines, and granted it's a discretionary decision, that a public hearing should be held. But once the director makes that determination that a public hearing should be held, then a public hearing shall be held. And so in that sense, it is mandated by a combination of the rules and the statute. But we do think the constitutional basis is the best issue that this court should examine. Because the project would adversely affect the interests of Kila Kila Ohalakala, which are protected by three constitutional provisions, a proceeding determining the rights, duties, and privileges of specific parties was required by law. Fourth.
Well, DLNR doesn't even contest the fact that you're entitled to a hearing, does it?
That's my reading of their brief, Your Honor.
So we have the three constitutional bases plus DLNR's consent to you having a hearing. The only question here is whether, I guess, DLNR should have issued a permit before having the contested case hearing, acknowledging that, I guess, your FEIS and, I don't know, what was the other study?
Management plan?
Indicated that there were going to be major impacts with respect to cultural practices and environmental concerns that would not be or could not be mitigated. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. And we believe, you know, looking at, for example, what this court did in E&J Lounge, where this court vacated the decision that was granted without the benefit of a formal contested case hearing, which strongly suggests you have to have your contested case hearing first before you issue the permit. We think it's absurd to make factual findings after decision making. The federal court case Cinderella, which has a famous line of cases, holds that it's constitutionally unacceptable for a decision maker to announce in advance its position on adjudicative facts. And this court essentially reached a similar analysis in Kapa'akai.
Has construction already started?
I can't say for sure, Your Honor. It's not in the record, and probably better ask the university's counsel.
But at least the CDUA permit was not stayed.
Correct, Your Honor.
I thought I saw in some of the briefs, or in one of the briefs, a representation that, in effect, construction had begun, or the stay was requested, but the stay was denied.
Okay, this is a little bit complicated. In April, I believe, the university announced it would begin construction. Their motions were filed. The Board of Land and Natural Resources then amended the permit in a manner that allowed certain construction activities to proceed, but not other construction activities. So the permit, the December 2010 permit, authorized construction to happen. Whether that construction commenced or not, I'm not in a position to actually say.
What about Justice Sokoba's second question? Was there a motion for stay that was denied?
There's a lot that's not in this record because of where we are. There was a motion filed with the Board of Land and Natural Resources. In addition, there is a separate declaratory action in which a motion for a temporary restraining order and preliminary injunction were filed. I don't know how far.
Didn't the judge, I thought the judge at the time they granted the motion refused the request for the stay?
You're talking about the circuit court case? No, that particular motion was withdrawn, you know, none of this is in the record. That particular motion was withdrawn after the university represented that it would not commence construction at the present time. That's not the exact language, but something to that effect. It wasn't a permanent announcement of no construction, but they weren't going to proceed at that time.
Is there any mechanism by which the board could withdraw their permit?
Not from our reading of the rules, Your Honor. And this is one that we've harped on quite a bit. There's not a process by which the board can essentially reconsider a prior decision and revoke it. I'll leave it at that. So because the December 2010 permit has not been invalidated, this case is clearly not moot. And if you, Your Honor, were to view it as such, we would argue the public interest exception applies because there's a public interest in having the court rule that the court has jurisdiction under Chapter 91 even when a formal contested case hearing has not been held, that it's in the public interest to have the court rule that a permit to develop land is a final order. There's a public interest in having the court rule that a conservation permit cannot be granted before a contested case hearing has been held. And there's a public interest in ruling that Native Hawaiians should have the opportunity to present evidence before a fair and impartial decision maker, cross-examine witnesses, and preclude ex parte communication before a conservation district permit is granted.
Did the permit say that the university had 2 years to commence construction under the permit?
I don't believe the permit itself is in the record, as I recall. It was the fact that it was amended and the conditions that were amended. It is pretty standard practice. I can't remember the administrative rule 13-5. I can't remember in which there is a time limit on commencing construction and completion. So there are time limits that are standard conditions that are imposed.
Mr. Frank, but what about the other prong for mootness, the exceptions to the mootness doctrine? The capable of repetition and...
Sure. We know that the Board of Land and Natural Resources adopted a new practice of voting before holding contested cases. We've cited to you a case that we recently filed in Circuit Court, which happened after this case. I included a declaration in which the Deputy Attorney General professed that was going to be the Board of Land and Natural Resources' intent. They were going to continue to engage in this practice. We've seen the Board of Land and Natural Resources routinely deny contested case hearings. It happened in the Kalakina case, we saw it in BART, which is an Intermediate Court of Appeals case, and the Sprote case, which went to the Circuit Court, but was settled. So we see a continuing practice. It is likely to continue.
The UH argues that you did not comply with the procedural requirements for filing your request for a contested case hearing. What's your answer to that?
We did everything possible. We did more than is actually required. We submitted our, Kilakila Haleakala put it in writing 3 times.
Well, I guess their rule says you have to file your written request within 10 days of the meeting of disposition.
Not within 10 days, Your Honor.
After 10 days.
No later than 10 days. You're right.
And so then, does the rule say that you have to wait a reasonable amount of time for the DLNR to act on that request?
No, Your Honor. That rule governs the conduct of the Board of Land and Natural Resources. They're supposed to take, but we're not supposed to wait. And let's think about it. Chapter 91 requires appeals to be filed within 30 days. So the board issued their decision on December 1st, 2010. We filed fairly promptly, but the board, when we filed our motion, the board had not acted. And in fact, by the time the university filed their motion to dismiss, the board still had not acted on the petition. By the time we filed a memorandum in opposition, the board had still not acted on
it. Is it customary for the board to grant a permit and then take objections to the granting of that permit and then decide whether or not to have a contested case on whether the permit which was issued should have been issued?
It was not customary. It has become a new practice of the board. We've cited to you a number of cases. For example, Mauna Kea Power, which dealt with the damming, proposed damming of Honolulu East Stream on the Big Island. There was a contested case hearing there before a decision was reached. We've cited to you
What would be the benefit of having a contested case hearing to decide whether a permit should issue if the permit was already issued?
It becomes a post hoc rationalization of a decision that's already been made, Your Honor.
I'm just curious. Are you aware of any case law on whether or not a conditional conservation district use permit is a final discretionary action for vested rights purposes?
I don't believe there is any case that's looked at that. We, of course, believe it is a final action here. Well, it's a final order, as that term is used in Chapter 91, because it does let construction proceed. If you look at let me point out the Mahuiki case. In Mahuiki, it was a special management area permit, and the Planning Commission of Kauai granted the permit on a condition. The developer had to come back and deal with some specific issues. And the Supreme Court, this court held that was sufficiently final because the subsequent conditions, fulfilling the subsequent conditions, did not deal with the original determination. So even though construction could not commence in the Mahuiki case, it was sufficiently final. And it was in that case the last discretionary permit, but there were conditions that still needed to be fulfilled.
After the appeal was filed and the case was in circuit court, how was it that the board was able to act without a remand from circuit court? How were they able to go forward? The 91-14 says the appeal shall be treated in the same manner as an appeal from the circuit court. So my question to you is how, when the case is sitting in circuit court, is the board able to take action?
I don't know that.
I mean, the statute provides a remand authority. The circuit court, there was no remand, was there?
No. No, there was not. Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. We still are confused as to the authority by which the Board of Land and Natural Resources acted and has been acted.
I mean, that's how come it's raised, that the fact that there could be duplicate things happening or things overlapping just by the fact that we have two proceedings going on at the same time, it seems to me.
Well, and Your Honor, there's quite a bit of litigation. Just we had to file, because I think there's still some ambiguity in the law, we had to file both a Chapter 91 appeal and a separate declaratory action. So we have those two cases, and now that this other contested case that is you're referring to concluded, we've had to file a separate appeal to that. So a plethora of litigation is generated by the board's action. If the board had acted like it used to, when it gets a request for a contested case hearing, it pauses, then it has the contested case that makes a decision, I think it would make everyone's life much easier.
In fact, even to enlarge the record that the circuit court had, which would include apparently the minutes and that, there's a procedure for that, and that wasn't followed.
Correct, Your Honor.
Do the board's rules, prohibit the board from doing what it did here, or are they open as to that issue?
I believe they do. I don't know my Latin, expressio unos, whatever the other Latin part is. So the Board of Land and Natural Resources rules specifically authorize appeals of department permits. That's in HER 13-5-33 G and H. But there's no provision made for an administrative appeal or even rehearing of the board's decision to grant a conservation district use permit. And I think actually more importantly is, this court's decision at E&J Lounge, and similarly in Pash and Mortensen, where the courts this court vacated decisions granted without the benefit of a formal contested case hearing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You would like to reserve the rest of your time for rebuttal?
I would.
Okay, thank you very much. Ms. Chow, thank you.
morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to start off by stating the one obvious premise in this case, which is if the appellant Kila Kila was entitled to a contested case, they got one. They went through a formal hearing. If they were not entitled to a contested case, then there is no right of appeal, and in either case, the decision of the ICA dismissing the appeal should be affirmed.
So if the Board of Land and Natural Resources hadn't decided to give a contested hearing, you're saying they have no right to appeal the permit?
Yes, because it's not a final decision.
So there's no way they have access to the courts?
Of course they have access to the court, because at some point the Board of Land and Natural Resources will make a decision once they have perfected their request for a contested case hearing, which requires both an oral or written request prior to the end of the meeting at which a decision is to be made, plus a follow-up written petition. Once they perfect that request, the board has to make a decision on whether to grant or deny the request for a contested case. If they grant the request for a contested case, then they go through a contested case and they get their formal hearing. If their request is denied, then under Kalaikini, they have a right of appeal under 9114.
By when does the board have to decide on a request for contested case hearing?
Well, the rules say that the board shall make a decision within a reasonable amount of time. And the in this particular case, the appeal was filed, I believe, the 10th day after the meeting was held. But you have to understand that this is a board that has to operate under Sunshine Law, Chapter 92. Under Sunshine Law, they have to regularly hold regular meetings, they have to notice the meetings, agendize the meetings in advance, and the Board of Land and Natural Resources, regular meetings are twice a month.
Did the permit allow the UH to proceed on construction of the project on Haleakala?
Yes, it would have allowed
them. So what more was to be done with respect to the approving of the project and allowing the project to proceed?
Well, what more had to be done was that the decision on the request for a contested case hearing had to be made.
What benefit would that be if the subject matter of the contested case hearing is to determine whether the permit should have been issued in the first place? If the permit's already been issued, and under the permit, I assume the UH can proceed on the project.
Well, the UH, under the standard conditions for the permit, they are not allowed to proceed immediately. There are several other steps that they have to do. They have to get site plan or construction plan approval.
Assuming there are conditions to the permit, as you would expect, the fact is that the major decision has already been made that the project should proceed. Is that correct?
Yes, but...
So in effect, there has been a decision that, for all intents and purposes, is final.
No, it is not final. Because if you look at HAR 13-5-34, and this is a provision relating to board permits for conservation district uses. Subsection D says, contested case hearings, if applicable and as required by law, shall be held as provided in Chapter 13-1, Subpart 5. The aggrieved appellant or person who has demonstrated standing to contest the board action may request a contested case hearing pursuant to 13-1. And so we maintain that the granting of the permit at the board meeting is subject to the appellant or the person who's challenging the action to complete their request for a contested case hearing and for the board to make a decision on whether or not a contested case hearing must be held.
So is it your argument then that Kila Kila did not formally request a contested case hearing?
They did formally request a contested case hearing, but to say that the decision was final when the board, entered a decision at the meeting, but the rules provide that a written petition must be filed within 10 days after that, would either indicate that the decision at the board meeting is not final or that the written petition is a nullity.
Well, the question was asked, does the board have the power to rescind or to withdraw the permit after issuing it if it finds that the outcome should be different after the contested case here?
Yes, yes. And there are two bases for that. The first basis is the standard condition, which is contained in 13-5-40. Excuse me, 13-5-42, subsection 1, which says that the applicant should comply with all applicable statutes, laws, and rules and regulations of any county governments, as well as a rule that says that the board permits are subject to contested case hearings. And so these two mean that if upon holding the contested case hearing, the board finds that, you know, that it's inappropriate for the permit to issue, they can rescind the issue. That inherent authority was also affirmed in the Morgan case.
So does your permit state that then, that there will be a contested case hearing, and if the outcome of the contested case hearing is the determination that the permit should not have been issued, then the permit will be yanked?
It does not state that specifically.
So if the hearing takes a year, 2 years, or whatever it takes to have, and of course, when they decided that they were going to have a hearing, it didn't say in the minutes when the hearing would be, correct?
Correct.
So, in fact, they had to determine standing first. So it might have taken a long, long time, and there's a valid permit out there. Is that right?
That's correct.
Which permitted development and construction.
But, you know, you have to look at the, it would have once they had fulfilled the condition. But you have to look at these rules in the context in which the board operates. The board doesn't only operate by issuing permits for telescopes. The typical situation that the board has to address is conservation district use permits for single family homes.
When the board got the FEIS, and I guess I'm sure, I may be wrong, I thought it was another report, which indicated there would be adverse impacts which could not be mitigated on the practice of cultural rights and on the environment. Did the board at that point think that maybe it should get public input on what these adverse impacts might be and whether or not the board should then decide based on public input or the consideration of public input whether the permit should issue or not?
Well, I can't speak to what the board thought when the board members voted on this, but they did allow public input at the public meeting that was held, and they granted the
they cut off testimony.
Hearing.
Oh, I'm sorry. They cut off testimony, didn't they, at the hearing?
3 minutes each.
I believe they did instruct that they asked the people to stay within 3 minutes, but I'm not sure that it was strictly observed.
Ms. Chow, I'm a little curious. I'm now a little bit confused. Which request by Kilakila Ohaleakala for a contested case hearing was the one that was actually granted, and when was it actually granted?
I'm not sure when it was actually granted, but there was the request. The oral request was made at the meeting on December 1st. A written petition was filed by Kilakila on December 2nd.
Oh, I'm sorry. What about the May and July?
The May and July ones, I believe the May one came in before the application for the permit was even submitted by UH. And so...
Well, I thought UH submitted their application in March.
They may, okay, and I'm sorry if...
And so they requested, they filed a request in May,
but
right?
It was not scheduled for a board meeting.
The minutes reflected that there were four requests that they were responding to. So they cite the four.
And
they didn't include all of them, but they cited the four.
And I believe that the decision that they made was based on the December 2nd written petition that was filed.
What about the July request? Was there ever any action on that?
No, because at that point, at July, there was no, the permit application was not scheduled to be before the board as part of a board meeting at that.
Ms. Chow, is it the board's position that a contested case hearing was required by law, and if so, based on what?
Well, that becomes a very sticky question. As far as whether it's required by law, we have maintained that the only, because the rights are have only been asserted based on the Constitution, and that the Constitution does not provide a sufficient property interest which would entitle them to a contested case, that that they may not, that it was, may not have been required to be held.
What kind of interests are you talking about?
Their Native Hawaiian interests, their interests that was asserted subject to Article 12, Section 7.
So the practice of cultural practices, that kind of matter, that would not necessarily fall within the, you know, the traditional idea of a property right, would it?
It does not fall within the traditional idea of a property right. And in
nevertheless,
addition,
if there is a violation of that right, it would be a violation of a constitutional right, wouldn't it?
It would be, but the stage at which they requested an appeal of the decision from the board, made at a board meeting, is not the appropriate place to be looking at these issues. These issues were fully examined and cross-examined during the formal hearing that was held. And whether or not they have shown that they actually have constitutional,
well, if the assertion is made that there is a constitutional right at issue, then isn't the question then before the board whether or not there should be a contested case hearing? Because the board already had before it two reports that said there would be adverse impacts, substantial adverse impacts on cultural practices, and that it did not seem that there could be anything that would mitigate that. Wouldn't that bring to the board the clearly the proposition that here this article would be implicated, and therefore the board should have a contested case hearing?
And the appropriate place, yes, there should be, and the appropriate place to examine those issues is in a formal hearing once the petitioner, once the person requesting it, perfected their request by filing the written petition. And that would, that's the standard procedure that the board applies to all the types of permit requests that come before it. And these same procedures are used for violations. And in violation cases, many times the violators want to know what
they
the
said they filed a letter on September 3rd, a petition on May 24th, 2010, a resubmission of the petition on July 8th, 2010, a oral request on August 2010, and another oral request at the decision-making, I guess, meeting on December 1st. So with all those requests, the board couldn't come to a decision on before issuing the permit on whether or not there should be a contested case here?
The board did not. I don't know if it could have made a decision, but it did not make a decision as to whether or not it wanted, it would grant the request for a contested case hearing. And if the board decides they want to take that under a more careful review after looking at the petition, which was not before them at the time of the when the application was before them at the meeting, because it had not been part of their sunshine agenda, then I think that's a prerogative of the agency to be able to take a closer look at what happened, and also to give the person requesting the contested case an opportunity to file a written petition based on what actually occurred at the meeting to further refine where they're opposed, what they're opposing about the action, and what about it that they are want to have a contested case on.
Ms. Chow, is there a provision before the contested case hearing is held whereby the permit can be withdrawn? So as Justice Pollack mentioned, they request a contested case hearing and the board could take years.
And I think it's always within the inherent authority of the board to, based on circumstances that arise, as indicated in the Morgan case, that they can reconsider their decision or possibly reverse their decision.
Was that after the contested case hearing?
No, you could do it before the contested case hearing if the circumstances in which the original petition were.
So there's no formal procedure, but you're saying it's within their inherent powers.
Yes.
So they could have withdrawn their granting of the contested hearing. In other words, so they lose their right to appeal when they schedule the contested hearing, and they regain it when they withdraw the contested hearing? Is that what you're saying?
No, I must, and I don't want to eat into the...
Well, I'll allow you to finish the question.
Yeah, what we're saying is that they do not have a right to appeal to begin with until the request for contested case was either granted or denied.
Again, when was that decision made? When was the decision made as to whether or not a contested...
Subsequent to the filing...
When was it?
I don't have that date, I'm sorry.
Well, your rules do require that the decision be made within a reasonable period of time, correct?
Yes.
So I'm just curious, how can we decide whether even that... Well, at this point, we are dealing with the issue of jurisdiction.
But at that point, there was nothing... There was no construction at Haleakala. There was nothing, none of petitioner's rights.
You do recognize that if there, our case law does say that if constitutional due process requires a contested case hearing, then one is required.
Yes, and one was given.
And it's either agency rule or statute. If none of these agencies had, if there were no statutes or no agency rules requiring contested case hearings for any agency, are you saying that an agency could, even though constitutional due process may require a contested case hearing, and agencies could just go ahead and issue permits without the contested case hearing, and then even if there was a request, and go ahead and grant the permits and allow construction to proceed, and the party that requested the contested case hearing would have no right to appeal the issuance of the permit. And let's say later on, a year or two later, the request for a contested case hearing was denied, and at that time the construction was already finished. That would be the only time they could then appeal.
That would be the only time that they could appeal, but that would not be the only relief that they would have available. 9114 specifically states that that it does not cut off any other recourse that they may have.
So they should file a deck action then at that point?
Or in injunctive relief if the board or the agency is not acting on their request, but that is not what...
Didn't they file a declaratory relief even before the permit was granted? Didn't they file it on November 22nd?
No, I don't believe so.
November 22nd, 2010? I think it was the deck action was November 22nd.
I'm not sure about that, but I believe that was with regard to the FEIS on the management plan, not on the permit.
Are there any other further questions at this time? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Ms. Munger, your argument.
It's not too much to ask. May I have the full 15 minutes? As I know, Ms. Chow did go a bit over in responding to the court's question.
Oh, no, that was on us because we were asking her questions, so we'll extend that. Again, that shouldn't count against your time. You can go ahead for the 15 minutes.
Thank you very much. May it please the court, my name is Lisa Munger, and I'm here today with Lisa Bale and Adam Robinson, appearing on behalf of the University of Hawaii. I'd like to address 4 points to the court in the course of my argument, and I also, of course, want to respond to some of the questions that have been asked thus far. But briefly, the 4 points would be first that the Circuit Court and the Intermediate Court of Appeals correctly concluded that this was a premature agency appeal, that it was not a final decision and order following a contested case. Secondly, that this particular appeal is moot. I'd like also to address the exceptions to the mootness doctrine with respect to the questions of the court on those. And finally, I'd like to argue to the court that the board's rules make sense, that they afford due process and should not be found to be unconstitutional, and particularly to bring to the court's attention some unintended adverse consequences to a myriad of permit programs by holding that a contested case must be on an application rather than on a permit by the agency or a board. First, let me address the point that this appeal was not from a final decision and order following a contested case. In the course of appellant's arguments, they made reference to a number of this court's decisions, and I'd like to emphasize that this appeal is readily distinguished from those. This is not a case where the contested case was denied. The contested case was not denied. The appeal was filed before there was a decision on a contested case. So this isn't Bush, this isn't E&J Lounge, this isn't PASH or Pele Defense Fund. This also is not an appeal where the agency failed to follow.
Why isn't it like PASH, where I thought this court said that if you issue a permit, then a party's constitutional rights are affected, then there should be a contested case hearing.
Your Honor, both in Pele Defense Fund and in PASH, the specific language of those cases finds that without regard to the source of the right to the hearing, including the constitutional right, that the agency is required to provide the contested case to the interested person who must have followed the agency's rules regarding participation in a contested case. So I would distinguish those cases, Your Honor, on the grounds of participation in a contested case, and that language is found both in...
I understand your position is they didn't follow the procedure. They say they did follow the procedure. So that aside, assuming that the procedure defect was harmless or not really connected to the case, what would support the board in refusing to hold a contested case hearing, inasmuch as this was a permit that issued and a constitutional right was asserted?
The court did not at any time refuse a contested case, Your Honor. That's not on the record in this matter. The board.
I'm sorry, I meant the board.
The board did not refuse a contested case. The board followed its rules, which state that it will take public testimony at a hearing. It'll take public testimony.
There was a refusal.
The applications, and then rule thereafter.
There was a denial. Early on, there was a denial. June 10th, there was a denial of the request for a contested hearing.
Your Honor is referring to the staff's denial of the first letter, which indicated that...
I'm referring to the fact that there was a denial to the request.
Your Honor, and I believe that the basis of the denial was the failure to follow the rules, and it was not, of course, a decision by the board. It was a staff response. So I don't believe that that shows that there was a denial. Surely there was no appeal from that denial. What we have here is an appeal filed after a board meeting where the request for the contested case was pending.
There's a short statement of what due process is, and I forget it, but I think it's something about the meaningful opportunity to be heard or something to that effect. So are we satisfying due process if the objection is to the permit issuing and construction proceeding? If the permit issues and construction can proceed, and I assume there's a limited time within construction for the construction to be completed, if you hold the contested case hearing after you issue the permit, how meaningful of an opportunity is that to be heard.
Your Honor, I agree that due process requires that you have the notice and an opportunity to be heard at a meaningful time and in a meaningful matter. And
well, you stated it much better than me. Thank you.
But I do believe that that was afforded in this case. And the way that that was afforded is that the board granted the permit subject to conditions. And the board's issuance of permits is subject to a couple of conditions, only one of which was mentioned by Ms. Zhao. But I think it's an important one, and that the standard conditions are found in section 13.542. And A1 provides that the applicant shall comply with all applicable statutes, ordinances, rules, regulations, including this chapter. So including that there would be a contested case.
If you're only allowed, if the plaintiffs are only allowed allowed to appeal from a denial of a contested case hearing, in theory, the board could grant the permit and not act on the request for a contested case hearing. Is there any requirement that there's a certain amount of time, or is it just reasonableness?
In my understanding of the board's rules, that it's a reasonable time. And I believe that in this particular case, a reasonable amount of time was passed. And by the time this was argued to the circuit court knew that it had been placed on a board agenda, and it had noticed public meeting and had been approved. So I don't think that this is a case where there was an unreasonable amount of time.
When was it finally actually approved, the hearing, the request for a contested case hearing?
The request for the contested case was approved between the a memo went up and the reply brief, because the reply brief of the state attached the board's decision approving the
reply brief to the ICA
in the Chapter 91 appeal, and the particular date is February 11th, 2011.
So which request was actually ruled on, the July request or the December request?
I believe it was the December request.
Whatever happened to the July request?
Your Honor, I can't speak for the board on that. I know that what went to the board itself was the last request.
Just so I'm clear, is it your position, Ms. Munger, that once the request for a contested case hearing was approved, that the university was precluded or prohibited from commencing with construction? Is that what I understood you to say? Because you said subject to all legal requirements, and at that point, is it your concession that the UH would not have been able to proceed once the contested case hearing was approved?
I think I would phrase it a little bit differently, and I'd like to, if the court would indulge me, to combine it with two provisions. Provision one is the provision that the applicant complies with rules, including the requirement to the contested case. Condition 10 is that the applicant understands and agrees that the permit does not convey any vested right or exclusive privilege. And that is found in 13.542A10. So that at the time the contested case was granted, the university knew that the permit was subject to the continuing jurisdiction of the board, and that continuing jurisdiction included whether the university could proceed with construction.
Wouldn't a reasonable time to be heard be in under these circumstances, where you have, I think, two reports saying there would be adverse, substantial impacts that could not be mitigated on the land, to hear, in light of those circumstances, the objections before you issue the permit? Wouldn't that be the reasonable time? So then you would be able to fashion the permit in order to adjust whatever conditions needed to be adjusted, rather than to set out the conditions without the benefit of a contested case hearing and give that to the contractor and then have the contractor proceed on those conditions.
No, Your Honor, I appreciate that that is one way it could be done.
No, I ask you, isn't that the reasonable way to do it?
No, and in fact, it's quite different than the way it's done in every other environmental permit. For example, air quality, water quality, solid and hazardous waste. On every state of Hawaii environmental law, federally approved, the public hearing is on the draft permit. And the
representation was made before. that the board did it the other way. And only in this or very this situation or very recently has it changed its approach. Now, if the board did it that the you would think the logical way in the past, why is it not doing it today?
I do not know, Your Honor, why the board did it this way. My understanding that the record says that the board has done it both ways in the past, and from my personal experience, that's my understanding. It has done it both ways in the past. But part of the reason that you look to make the decision at a certain point is that often you will not need a contested case if you know what the conditions are. The conditions matter. That's what happens in, for example.
Are you saying that the discretion of whether or not to have a contested case is solely that of the agency, that they have the final and ultimate say as to when a contested case must be had or heard?
No, Your Honor. My suggestion was that in this that the board's rules have a procedure, and that the procedure in this case was followed. The university followed the rules as the board implemented them. I appreciate that this court can determine if a contested case is denied that it should not have been denied. But in this case, Your Honor, what we have is a contested case was granted. There was no construction during that period.
Are you conceding that if there is a pending request for a contested case hearing that has not been ruled upon, despite the issuance of a CDU permit, there is no right to begin any construction, no matter what, pending a decision on the contested case hearing?
Your Honor, I guess...
Request.
Your Honor, in this case, construction could not commence during that permit, during that period, because the conditions of the permit had been, which would have allowed construction, could not have occurred during that period. As I advised the circuit court at the time of oral argument, at that time, construction could not have occurred.
How do you know that? You don't know how long it's going to take for them to hold a contested case hearing. That is exactly what you told the circuit court, which is, as a practical matter, we're not going to, the things that have to happen before construction can begin aren't going to happen. But how do we know that as a matter of, it's sort of a factual argument, and it's not a matter, I guess what we want to know is, as a matter of law, what does the law require, and can the builder or the person who's got the permit go forward with construction?
Yeah, and in this case, Your Honor, we could not. As I told the circuit court correctly, we could not. Now, could I envision a case where the board would not act in a reasonable time? Yes, I can envision.
You couldn't because the law precluded it, or you couldn't because you had other conditions you had to meet first, and once you met those conditions, then you could begin construction. Two very different things.
Two very different things. In this particular case, there were conditions that I could not have met in that particular period of time. But also, as a matter of law, my permit was subject while the contested case request was pending.
What if it was denied the next month? Could you have started construction?
If the contested case had been denied the next month, as a factual matter, no, we could not have started construction.
Okay, assuming you complied with everything else and the only thing pending now was the request for a contested case hearing, it was then denied, you would then be able to start construction.
We would, Your Honor, but of course we also would know that the denial of the contested case would be subject to appeal, and the issuance of the permit would still be subject
and then
to the
that
rules
appeal,
with respect to
that appeal. For that appeal, would the petitioner be required to post any bond or anything like that pending that appeal? Because you already had the permit?
I don't know. I think that's a fact. That's a determination to be made by the court.
Another question
but
I have.
In all cases, before or during, after the contested cases, the standard conditions of this, of the board's rules, make it clear that there can be change as a result of the contested case, and that you do not have that vested right.
You are conceding that a CDUP is not. Gives you no vested rights, correct?
Correct, by its
and
very
so
terms.
And so that is how you would distinguish PASH, which dealt with an SMA, which does give vested rights.
rights.
Exactly, Your Honor. That by its express terms, and that while the CDP itself is not before the court, if the court looks at minute order number 19, which was placed in the record by the appellants, minute order 19 specifically states, quote it to the court, minute order 19 specifically states that first, that no construction shall occur during the pendency of the contested case proceeding. The board did allow us to undertake a mitigation measure, which we decided not to undertake. The mitigation would have been the removal of an old astronomy remnant that had been requested as part of the mitigation of the project. But it concludes any activity is done at the university's sole risk and discretion, and any construction undertaken shall not be the basis for a later assertion of vested rights or exclusive privilege on behalf of the university.
So that meant they could go forward, but it was just at their risk. And in fact, you were specific, I'm not sure if it was you, but the court before it ruled, it specifically asked, would the agency voluntarily stay any implementation of the CDUA pending resolution of the process so that we don't get stuck in a situation like the Superberry or construction of a hotel? And the response was, this isn't the proper time to do this, that the proper time would be at the contested hearing stage.
Correct, Your Honor.
Which could have happened years later.
Well, that was not what happened, of course, that there was not this is not a case where the agency took months and months and months to decide, or the agency did not follow its rules and act in a reasonable time. There's no evidence that the agency failed to follow its rules and act in a reasonable time. I think the position expressed there is one that where you have a premature agency appeal that should be dismissed for lack of jurisdiction, that the decision with respect to a stay should be made by the board under its continuing jurisdiction over the contested case proceedings. And that, of course, is what happened here.
I would agree with you if there wasn't a permit that was already issued that authorized construction.
Authorized construction subject to various conditions. And, Your Honor, if the suggestion...
Well, if the permit issued before or after the contested case hearing, you still would have a CDU permit with all kinds of conditions attached to it.
Yes, I may have missed the import of Your Honor's questions. I apologize.
I'm just saying that the permit itself would have conditions with respect to the environment, et cetera, whether it was issued before or after the contested case hearing.
Yes, Your Honor, but they would be...
So it wasn't the contested case hearing that was really pivotal here. You had already decided that the construction should go forward, the project should go forward, right?
Your Honor, we had a permit, and we also knew that that permit was subject to a contested case proceeding, and the result of the contested case proceeding would be a de novo review, and we also knew that we did not have a vested right in that permit. That's exactly what that's what the board's rules say, and that's what the permit says. And the university respected the contested case process. We all participated in it. The appellant participated in it. The university participated in it. We had all of the standard trappings of cross-examination and exceptions and such. So, Your Honor, we proceeded with...
Was there ever a remand or request from the appellate courts to allow this proceeding to proceed?
Your Honor, the case was dismissed.
The case is on appeal. We're arguing it right now.
But there was not, I think, as I understand Chapter 91, in order for there to have been a remand, the circuit court would have had to have determined that it had jurisdiction and to remand it for further proceedings. That did not happen. What we have is a dismissal and an appeal of the dismissal. So I don't know under what as I stand here, Your Honor, I'm not confident that I have an understanding of how there could have been a remand under 9114.
Any further questions from the court? Thank you very much, Ms. Munger. Mr. Frankel, your rebuttal. And how much time does Mr. Frankel have?
He has 7.
Okay.
Mr. Frankel, you know, the representation has been made that this manner of decision-making in contested cases happens all the time. And I have never seen that happen. Every case that's come up on an agency appeal, I've never seen the sequence. Because, to be frank, it would seem illogical and somewhat unreasonable to decide the merits of an issue before you have a contested case hearing on the merits itself. I don't know. Do you know of any case that confirms something like that?
There's not a single case. If you look at the Water Commission, what the Water Commission does, and your cases reviewing Water Commission decisions, including my whole age, if you look at
if you go as far back as East Diamond Head and the Mike Town case, where the court said, we don't have a formal 91 proceeding, but we're going to take jurisdiction, we're going to allow an appeal on 91, because clearly people's rights and privileges have been decided.
Right.
And is that any different from this case?
No different. We go all the way back to the Mortensen case brought by a young attorney, Nakamura. Future Justice Nakamura. I mean, yeah, that has been the you see it throughout decisions of the Land Use Commission, Kapa'akai case, looking at the procedure. It's always the contested case hearing occurs beforehand. And if you look at some of your decisions, the rationale is clearly there. In Kapa'akai, this court says allowing after the fact determinations may leave practitioners of customary and traditional uses unprotected from possible arbitrary and self-serving actions on the petitioner's part. Or in Citizens, this court talked about the risk becoming a post hoc rationalization to support action already taken. Or in the Kelly case, you talked about a thorough assessment of possible adverse impacts the development would have on the state's natural resources preceding permitting and construction. I mean, it's logical. The court has articulated the rationale in various contexts. And federal courts, say it's constitutionally unacceptable for a decision maker to announce in advance its position on adjudicative facts. In this case, this court would not have, in E&J Lounge, vacated the decision of the Liquor Commission simply because of contested case. I mean, that's what the court vacated, because you've got to have your contested case hearing first. And if we look at the administrative rules of the Board of Land and Natural Resources, section 13-1-29, regarding the contents of a request for a contested case hearing, the requester must describe the disagreement that it has, quote, with an application before the board. And in decision-making, 13-1-38B, the BLNR's quote, shall render its findings of fact, conclusions of law, and decision in order, approving the application, denying the application, or modifying the application by opposing conditions. It makes no sense to have the contested case hearing after the decision is made, and the rules don't support such a process. I also want to deal with the issue of finality. I am amazed that the university would have the audacity to suggest construction was not going to take place during the midst of the contested case hearing. Here's their letter in the record, April 10th, 2012. In accordance with the Conservation District Use Permit MA-3542, condition number 4, we are formally notifying the Department of Land and Natural Resources that construction activity will commence on Monday, May 14th, 2012. The university, that was their position. For them to say to you today, no, we can't do construction after the permit's been granted until the contested case hearing is done, is absurd. But I do want to express a concern with one of Justice McKenna's questions, because I think analytically it's going down the wrong road, and that is the issue is not vested rights. The issue is finality of the agency decision. And this court addressed that in Mahuiki. The Intermediate Court of Appeals addressed in Pella Defense Fund versus Puna Geothermals. And that is, conditions do not per se affect the finality of the approval of the permit for the purposes of appeal. And in Mahuiki, the court observed that the permit at issue was subject to several conditions. The court had no difficulty concluding that such conditions do not per se affect the finality of approval of the permit. simply because another agency is involved in terms of conditions that are in a permit doesn't mean that that particular agency's decision is not final. The issue is not vested rights. The issue is the finality of the decision. Evidence of the finality here is the university's ability to construct. But construction per se is not necessary to establish that the agency's decision was a final one. So I want to make that point clear. The BLNR's conduct is a deliberate effort to avoid judicial oversight. The decision of the Intermediate Court of Appeals ignores decades of decision by this court, closes the courthouse doors, and hinders public participation in decision-making. The BLNR authorized the university to construct a 142-foot-tall building that will rise above the summit of Haleakala, a significant traditional cultural resource. The BLNR issued this permit without giving appellant the ability to fully participate in this decision-making before it was made. Thank you.
Mr. Frank, let me just ask, what would the relief be that you would seek at this point? And realize that we don't have, you know, there's limits on what we have in the record regarding the other matter, but what would you be asking the court to do?
Two things. First, hold that the circuit court had jurisdiction, and second, consistent with what this court did in E&J Lounge, remand to the circuit court with instructions to vacate the December 2010 permit.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. The court will take this matter under advisement. Thanks to all of our attorneys for your arguments today.